The following is a presentation of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. The Cold Slither, you'll be joining us
soon. Good evening, Rick. Would you believe it's Dr. Doom?
What's on your evil mind?
Oh, you insulting tongue, it mocked my words well.
How about this rumor that you are really hired, Mr. Stark?
And welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nations Comic Book Chronicles.
Yeah!
I am your host, Tim D-O-double-G.
Yeah!
Tonight I'm joined by the man behind the sound effects, at Agent_70 on Twitter.
What's up, everybody?
And also here with us tonight is at PCN_dirt on Twitter.
Yay!
Rocking the nice Voltron hat.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Nice.
About that. Good stuff.
Very cool.
And back with us this week after our short time off is at RoddyCat on Twitter.
What's going on, everybody?
Roddy's got to pay the bills.
Sir.
Go to our website, theclicknation.com, where you can find previous episodes of the Comic Book Chronicles and Comic Book Reviews. Follow the Twitter account, at CBCron. Like the Facebook fan page, facebook.com/TheClickNation. Add us to your circles on Google+. Go to google.com/+ TheClickNation. Subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and youtube.com/TheClickNation. We are a part of the Cold Slither Podcast Network. Go and listen to us on cspn.us. And make sure to buy Comic Book Chronicles merchandise from their Redbubble website. That's redbubble.com/people/CSPN/shop. And also going back to subscribing to the iTunes feed, you can do it from the bit.ly short URL link, bit.ly/CBCronPod. And we record live every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And make sure to use the hashtags Comic Book Chronicles and CBCron when you're discussing comic books. All right. Let's see. So first up, we have the cinematic news for the week where we discuss comic book TV and movie news. Let's see. The Martian actor nabs a key role in Doctor Strange. And that Martian actor is Benedict Wong, cast as Wong, the good doctor's trusty sidekick.
Yeah, seriously, I did not know that guy's first name was Benedict, and I thought I was, like, seeing double or misreading the articles every time. You know, when the news first dropped, I was like, the guy's name is really Benedict? So there's two Benedicts in this production? That's pretty, you know, it's pretty interesting for, what's now a relatively rare name.
Yeah, people have been joking next. You know, people with the Benedict Cumberbatch misnaming. Now there's like, well, now we got to add another one?
Let's see. Marvel announced a new volume of Thunderbolts being led by the Winter Soldier and from the creative team of Jim Zub and John Mallon.
Yeah, I'm not sure how to feel about this.
I was originally not pumped up about Thunderbolts just from the teasers they were releasing every other day. Mm-hmm. But I am glad to see Jim Zub on a ongoing Marvel superhero comic. He's been doing a lot of creator-owned stuff with Skull. Was it Skull something? My brain's gone blank.
Skull
on me.
Kickers.
Skull Kickers. I wanted to say Skull Kickers, but that didn't sound right for some reason in my head.
Well, I kept thinking Skull Island.
Yeah.
Skull. I was like, Skull Island. Yeah, Skull. No, that's not right.
Skull Kickers, which came to an end last year, and he's got Wayward going on now, and he's done stuff with the Marvel Disney Figment and Figment 2. So congrats to them. Batman v Superman adds The Walking Dead's Lauren Cohan as Martha Wayne.
Cool.
Yeah.
Seems a little late to be adding people to the movie.
I mean, it's to one scene, though, you know?
I wonder if they're actually...
Presumably they're going to show that one scene.
I wonder if it's more of a, we just now found out that she's in it, so let's put out this press release for it.
Yeah, I wonder if maybe Probably. It was supposed to be more of a secret, mm-hmm. and then maybe someone slipped at a convention or snuck a photograph or something like that, and it's like, all right, let's just PR it instead of letting it leak out.
Right.
The Star Wars live-action TV series is dead, ... for now. So there's been a lot of debate on whether or not there'd be any live-action Star Wars properties on something like ABC, like how Marvel does with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Agent Carter. So I say, you know, there's still plenty of time for them to change their minds. Delroy Lindo will play adventure-seeking rogue Dominic Fortune in Marvel's Most Wanted, speaking of TV shows from Marvel on ABC.
That's an interesting choice for that character.
Very interesting, very interesting. I always liked Delroy Lindo as an actor. I always thought that Dominic Fortune was kind of an underutilized character in the Marvel Universe. He's made a few appearances in recent times, you know, as told in flashback, because I guess the character in you know, quote-unquote Marvel real time has aged quite a bit. You know, growing up, I think my favorite Dominic Fortune appearance was, I think, in a team-up, a Marvel team-up with Spidey. But otherwise, you know, this is an inspired choice, because I like Delroy Lindo as an actor.
Right.
I know nothing about Dominic Fortune, so I need to do some Googling.
Well, no, he was in a S.H.I.E.L.D. book. I think it was the last volume, probably one of the last issues of the last volume.
Right.
Book, so.
Right. Like, whatchamacallit, they had him in present day.
Right.
The Flash is going to add yet another speedster to its roster. Allison Page will play Trajectory on an upcoming episode this season.
All right, I'm a little bit behind on The Flash. Is it just like introduce a new character every other week now?
More or less.
Yeah.
Wow.
They
haven't done anybody. Well, I don't know about this week, but hadn't introduced anybody
recently.
Oh, wait. Well,
I mean,
it's not every week, but
yeah,
it just seems like it because I'm behind. That's all. You know, I've only just watched. I think I missed the episode where they actually introduce Wally West.
Right.
So, but I've seen an episode where he's auditioning to be a member of the Fast and Furious crew.
Oh yeah.
So that I caught.
Yeah, they're like just 2 weeks behind, I think.
Yeah. Oh.
Disney chairman says there will be more Star Wars and Marvel past 2019. Go figure.
Oh, just listen to the ka-ching, ka-ching.
Oh, this is news I did not know. Marvel and Netflix's Iron Fist series as a writer.
Nice.
He's made himself known via Twitter, and it's someone with connections to one of the previous shows. Oh, so now I gotta click the link to see who they're talking about.
I don't know.
Writer Scott Reynolds, who also worked on Jessica Jones. And this is coming from comicbookmovie.com. Who usually when I go to their website, it seems like it's always like an ad-filled mess, but
oh, no.
Have they streamlined the site? Because it's looking kind of clean now. Okay. Gotham Stories views Gotham's villains through a comic book lens. The villains of Gotham City are the subject of Gotham Stories, a series of all-new motion comics set to debut next week on Fox.
Near and dear to Dirt's heart.
He doesn't watch Gotham, do you?
No, I'm talking about the motion comics.
Yes. All right, so our first ad read of the night is for Busted Tees. This episode of Comic Book Chronicles is sponsored by Busted Tees, your home for funny, awesome, cool t-shirts that are sure to get your friends' attention. Busted Tees puts many of their popular shirt designs on sale each week. Choose from several eye-catching t-shirts inspired by pop culture, such as BB-8 like Thumbs Up and Droid Evolution, Star Wars The Force Awakens, Bernie Larry 2016, pretty good. Curb Your Enthusiasm. I'm sure I butchered that.
No, that was dead on accurate. That was uncanny.
Rick and Morty as Legos, and much more are on sale. To help keep our podcast free, order from Busted Tees by going to cspn.us, that's cspn.us, then clicking on the Keep Our Podcast Free link. Click on the Busted Tees banner and then shop for awesome t-shirts. Busted Tees through cspn.us. Do it today.
Nice.
And let's see, the comic book news of the week. Lion Forge launches Saber Rider and the Star Sheriffs from, I have no idea, let's see, how do you say this? Marguerite Scott and Sindel Arts.
We apologize ahead of time.
I don't know if you're familiar with the property at all, but it was an anime series that was syndicated in the U.S. from the same people that did Voltron. So if you go to the Voltron store, you can still find DVDs of Saber Rider and the Star Sheriffs. And it's actually one of those things I ordered several years ago, and I sat down with Philip one, I think it was like a Saturday afternoon, and we just watched like 4 hours of them all in a row.
Nice.
It's a fun cool. show.
Yeah.
Okay. Marvel's new Dead No More teaser has a spidery twist, so the last...
Wait.
So this is going to be the later in the year event after Civil War 2 takes up the majority of the spring and summer. I guess to end the year would be Dead No More, because they have to have two big epic events a year, and now they're teasing that the return of a bunch of dead characters. And
Uncle Ben, yes!
No! My gut says it's going to be Ock, because that's what Slott's been teasing forever. And then as for the second character or an additional character, I'm not sure. But no, I think Uncle Ben... I mean, we used to say the same thing about Bucky. I think Uncle Ben has to stay dead.
Oh, so he's Professor X. Well, he's been that way. Never mind. What if it was Doc Ock in Uncle Ben's body?
Oh, no.
I'd read that.
Slott, are you listening? Slott, are you listening? You would absolutely just...
I think Dan Slott is clever enough to do that.
You know how they have that Uncle Ben who's got Spider-Man powers in the Spider-Verse, the Web Warriors book, right?
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if oh my goodness.
Slott's been arguing with the guy I follow for the past like day and a half on Twitter. kind of entertaining to watch.
Who gets this reference? I'm hoping the character they resurrect is Gene DeWolf.
I know Gene DeWolf was on the Newsarama list of like top 10 characters that could be revived from Spider-Man lore.
The Sin Eater.
Yeah.
The story was the death of Gene DeWolf, and she was like a nobody character throwaway in the books, and so they just killed her in like the first thing that happened in the story, and everyone's like, oh my gosh, you killed her! And you're like, well, yeah, because nobody cared.
DC Entertainment announced its new slate of Hanna-Barbera titles. That news came out today, first thing this morning. So it's going to be characters like Fred Flintstone, Scooby-Doo, Johnny Quest.
Space Ghost,
yes. And some racing franchise I didn't recognize.
Wacky Racers?
Yeah, Wacky Racers.
Of course.
So talent on board is Amanda Connor, Jim Lee, Keith Giffen, Howard Porter, Jeff Parker, Doc Shanner, among others.
Hey, wait, there was no Johnny Quest?
Yeah, Johnny Quest, that's what the Parker, Shanner, Jordy Belair team are doing.
Okay, so we can wait for the Dick Dastardly and Muttley book any day now, then.
It's like Johnny Quest, it's like a team-up book. It's like Johnny Quest and Space Ghost and all like the action heroes are in that book, I believe. And then the Scooby-Doo Apocalypse, where they like throw some tattoos on Shaggy and the other male on the team to make them seem hip. Fred, yeah.
Oh yeah, I saw the I had an image of it. They were all looked like they had like kind of space age gear with them or something in a cave. Yeah.
They looked like they were ready for
like an invasion or something.
My suggestion was turn Scooby-Doo into their Fast and Furious franchise. Turn them from, they could be ghost hunters that like do heists and whatnot.
Okay.
Insert some adrenaline into the franchise. Oh, man. Some Nas.
Have the Mr. Machine boosting all over the way, drifting.
That's funny.
So not sure what time of the year that stuff should start coming out, but we'll keep you posted. Marvel teams up with Wounded Warrior Project for Venom Space Knight arc.
That's still not going to make me pick that up.
No. I'll keep reading our review copies of it.
Maybe.
I haven't read this week's yet, but I'm still 2 weeks behind on some stuff.
Philip likes to read it, so we get it, but that doesn't mean I always necessarily read it. I read the first one, I skimmed the second one, the third one's still sitting on the coffee table in the other room.
GLAAD Awards nominate Angela Harley Quinn, Lumberjanes, Midnighter, and The Wicked Divine for their 2016 award show. Lucha Underground has launched a comic book, and you can read it online for free.
And it's got Rey Mysterio.
See, I knew you'd like that one.
They just started the new season of it, too.
Yeah.
I just recently learned that they do seasons for that.
Yeah, it is very much a show that has wrestling in it. It is not a wrestling show. Wait, like, there are...
As opposed to like, that other stuff?
They have, like, this, like, old temple that this warehouse was built on, and the guy who runs it is, like, this Mexican drug-connected gangster guy, and they have all these subplots with kidnappings and bribery, and it's all filmed, like, all the backstage stuff is filmed like you're watching a regular TV show, with multiple camera cuts and, you know, good lighting. It's not just a bunch of dudes backstage with the shaky camera following them around. Like, it's actually a show, and then it points in the show, people fight, and when they fight, they go to the ring and do wrestling. Like, it's bizarre. You gotta check out the show, though. It is great.
Nice.
Dover's line of graphic novels now available on Comixology and Amazon Kindle stores.
Okay.
Exclusive comics for in-store convention kickoff already allocated, and it cuts off. let's see, the in-store convention kickoff on March 5th will see a number of stores running streaming live video presentations from creators and publishers to comic book fans or comic book stores across North America. Okay. Walmart may set up their own graphic novel section.
Well, it's about time.
Yeah. They've been looking at the numbers. Oh, wait, the link didn't go in there. But they've been basically looking at the numbers and say, hey, this could happen. I think they already have Viz is already on board or something. I can't remember.
So are they just going to be selling, you know, they're going to set up like a small section where they're going to sell mostly trades, or do you think they're going to put in weeklies?
Well, and they're probably just going to, like, that one section they already have where the magazines and stuff are probably just going to set aside something there. But okay, I'm not sure the whole extent of it.
All right. And the next ad read is for My Comic Shop. Today's podcast is sponsored by My Comic Shop. Go to cspn.us, then click on the Keep Our Podcast Free link at the top of the page. From there, click on the My Comic Shop banner and order from a vast selection of new releases, back issues, vintage classics, graphic novels, and more to be delivered right to your door. Why bother slipping to the local comic book store when you can order your books online? My Comic Shop through cspn.us. Do it today.
Before we go into the books, or the book news, or into the
but
book
we still have two more stories. Are we not doing those?
Well, I don't know. You just did the ad read, so I figured that
was
good.
Yeah, right? I was just like, wait a second. We just like sort of stopped with Walmart.
I mean, we don't need to talk about whatever DC changes to solicits. And
nobody knows about Madballs except for the three of us. Maybe, I don't know, Tim might.
Go ahead and read it.
Well, no, I was going to, this is something different. There's a trailer out for the Platinum's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game that they're coming out with.
So, oh yeah, I watched that the other day.
Yeah, seems cool. And Platinum doing this is going to be kind of, it's probably going to be a little crazy. And the Transformers one they just did was pretty good. So, as Dirt was holding up his Mad Ball, because of course he has one.
Actually, these are knockoff ones that I found a couple weeks ago, actually.
Mm. Wow. Yeah.
But it's one of those things that you see them and it's like, yeah, that's coming home.
That's funny.
They were like 99 cents at a gas station.
Yeah, I don't believe I ever owned a Mad Ball.
Do they bounce?
Yeah, it's a foam ball with a plastic shell on it.
Oh, okay.
So basically the story behind that was that Mad Balls are coming back and Marvel's doing them, I guess. But they're calling them Mondo Balls and they're vinyl.
Okay.
And they'll be of, I guess, Marvel figures and Friday the 13th, they said, or something like that.
Marvel characters, Friday the 13th, yeah. Gremlins, and more.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
So if you're of a certain vintage.
Yeah, I was going to say, three of the actual Mad Balls, the Skullface, Hornhead, and Slobulus, will all be redone in the new series, along with the Marvel Gremlins and Friday the 13th ones. So, there you go.
Okay.
Let's see, who wants to, anyone have a book that they really want to start the show off with?
No, it's not all jump at once.
I want to hear about the Ghostbusters International from PC and Dirt.
Oh, okay. Am I the only one who read it?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Oh, tisk tisk, guys. What is that about? All right. Okay, well, here's the first thing you need to know. If you've never read any of the Ghostbusters before, you're perfectly fine picking this one up. It's got a, like, previously page or what came before, whatever you want to call it, where it runs down the basics of the storyline so that you understand what's happening. And then it also has another page where it shows the key characters of the story and explains who they are and what their connection to everybody is. So it even does biographies for the actual Ghostbusters. So even if you're not all that familiar with Ghostbusters, maybe you're a young person who just doesn't have the wherewithal to watch the movie and you want to know who these guys are, they got you covered. So there's really no excuse, not to start here. This is, you know, everybody talks about a jumping on point, and that's what this book is really designed for. He lays everything out, explains all the characters, and then goes into the story. And the story is basically this rich guy from some Scandinavian country wants to buy the Ghostbusters and turn them into a global franchise. And as it currently stands in the Ghostbusters comic, they do have a Chicago unit and their New York unit. So they've been, you know, toying with the idea of having other offices, yeah, expansion. And this guy, you know, lays out the offer to take them global. So that's where this story kicks off. It's got humor. It's got Kylie, who is one of the characters from Extreme Ghostbusters, has become a regular now in the series. The Walter Peck is still there. If you remember him from the original movie, he is back and working for the city and trying to annoy the Ghostbusters at every turn. And you know, it's just got that brand of humor that you expect with Ghostbusters, that sarcastic, dry dialogue, the quips going back and forth, things like that. And it's just, it's a good read. It's by no means like the best thing I read this week. I'm not, you know, buying 10 copies of these and putting them away for you know, the future or anything like that. But, I mean, it is, from the stuff that I read this week, it is one of the better books I've read this week. So, again, if you've been looking for any sort of jumping on point, this is it. And this is going to be the best time for you to jump into Ghostbusters, and this is a good issue to do it with.
Question. Didn't they do something similar to this a few volumes back? Like, where they were going around either the country or...
We did a coast-to-coast road trip.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. But this is just going wider. I got it. Okay.
So is this their version of Batman Incorporated?
Well, this doesn't get too far into the story yet. So this is more about picking up the pieces from the last volume and everybody kind of resetting and getting into a starting point where they can kick off this story. And so this issue ends with them contemplating the idea of possibly selling to this guy or opening, you know, more branches. So we don't know. They haven't accepted the offer yet, so we don't know exactly what's going to happen. We don't know if maybe they're going to go to Europe and have something crazy happen and then decide they don't want to open more offices, or they don't want to sell it outright, or they don't want to make it a, you know, franchise. We don't know, but that's what the story is kicking off, is that idea and them contemplating it.
Okay.
And then Ghostwing gets a short-lived book that no one reads, maybe.
What? Oh, God. I'm trying to think of what Ghostbuster is named Ghostwing. What are you talking about?
No, I was thinking of Batwing. But...
All righty.
Anywho.
Anyway.
Actually, that'd be Ghostbinger. Ghostbinger. Ghostbinger, and then you'd have Ghostwoman and Ghost Burl, mm-hmm. and Ghostbusters and Slimer, I guess, and Slimer's not Ghostbusters. And
the Ghost.
The Blue, the Gray, and the Ghostbusters.
Oh, no.
Ghostbusters by Midnight, the Ghostbusters Return, Someone Stop Me, Move On to Something Else.
Ghoster Gold.
All wonderful ideas, by the way. IDW, if you're listening, I tell you what, you can have those for free. We will let you just take those and run with them.
Indeed. Hey, Tim, Omega Man number 8, what's up?
You're starting to get staticky again, for one.
Uh-huh.
Oh, no.
But okay, Omega Man number 8, we got a lot of answers. It was a lot of, like, here's stuff going on in the present, and then we're going to jump backwards into the past and talk and show you characters and sort of the scenarios of how things led up to where they are now, and how the group wanted, how the Omega Men, why they're doing everything they are doing to try to kill the person in charge, and basically how he ruined the planet that you see there on the front cover, however you pronounce it, Vorl.
Okay.
And why they kidnapped Kyle Rayner and want his help. There's a lot of very touching moments throughout the issue involving the various members of the... Seeing, like, the flashback scenes with some of the various members of the Omega Men. And not to give too much away, they want Kyle Rayner and they want his ring to do something, to do a horrible act. So Kyle's having, like, a crisis of faith of, like, whether or not to actually help them or not. And then they show him some stuff to show them, to basically prove, you know, we're not these crazy terrorists for no, you know, just out of the blue for no reason. You know, that we have a reason for this. So that was Omega Men number 8. Very, very good read. So we only have 4 more issues before the series ends. So I'm left wondering, like, you know, where else can they go from here? Of course, there's still, I'm assuming, like a big climactic battle to take place, but I might be picking this up once the trade hits in, like, the end of the year, because DC stuff trades come out so late. But definitely enjoying the series. I'll be sad to see it leave. And Tom King, right. Your potential writer, best writer of 2016.
Wow. All right.
I'll be discussing him later on another comic he had that came out this week.
Yeah, I forgot that he did this book, and every time I see this book, I go, oh, that's Tom King, I need to read that. And then I completely forget about it until the next one comes out, and I go, oh, Tom King writes that? Yeah. I need to read that. And then I forget about it until the next one comes out. It's a vicious cycle that just keeps continuing.
Yeah, read all his books out. And what's funny is I did some rearranging of bookshelves last weekend, and like maybe 2 years ago, one of my coworkers' wives gets free like review copies of like actual like books, novels, or whatever you want to call them. And she had one. I don't think she read it or she wanted to read it, so she knew that I like comic book stuff. So she gave it to the coworker to give it to me. And it's about like superheroes. And honestly, I don't remember what it's about because I never actually read it. But when I was going through my bookshelves, I happened to look at the spine, and it said King on it. And I was like, wait a minute. But inside it, I was like, oh, shit, this is Tom King.
Yeah.
So now I'm having incentive to go and read it now.
All right, so tell me what the name of the book is so I can get it.
It's Downstairs. Actually, I tweeted a picture.
That's a weird name for a book.
For a book.
It's Downstairs. Look on Amazon. They don't have it.
I'll find the picture, though. But, right. But yeah, that's Omega Men number 8. Y'all go on watch. Find the title of this book.
Okay. Actually, I do want to talk about one thing that's not on my list, but I figure we should.
Doug, you went mute.
At least, oh, you lose me?
Am I still for a second is back.
Okay. I mean, when I was scanning through pictures, I think sometimes the bandwidth kills it. But yeah, this week saw the release of the DC branded coloring pencils here. The 12 colored pencils, as they're called, from Sargent Art. So now all of your adult coloring book variants can now be professionally colored with your licensed legitimate coloring pencils here. And not only that, but I found out that CGC, the people who grade comic books, if you color one of those covers and then send it in to be graded, they will list you as an actual colorist on the book. You nice. Have your name on the little placard at the top of the book, signifying the fact that you were a colorist on that issue.
Wow.
And I thought last year was the year of the colorist.
That is too funny.
Please tell me those pencils have branded names like Batman Black or Green Lantern Green.
No.
Yellow.
Actually, the best thing is this is a regular pack of color pencils, and that Batman thing on there is just a sticker that they stuck on the front of the regular box.
And it probably costs like $20, right?
I think most stores were selling for about $5 or $6.
Okay.
That's not bad.
I actually bought a couple of the coloring book variants this week, and I'm trying to talk myself out of buying a couple more.
I picked up the Superman one for Superman 48.
I almost got the Cyborg one.
I'm debating on the Cyborg. See, that's the problem. I got the regular, on my pull list, I have the regular Cyborg, the regular Grayson, and my shop didn't get We Are Robin, even though it came out this week, because I guess of some issue with solicits or whatever. Mm-hmm. But Second Charles has the coloring book cover variants for all three of those. I'm like, do I want two of these just to get a coloring book cover? So I'm trying to talk myself out of it like I just said.
Actually, the funny thing is this week, our two top-selling coloring book covers are Deathstroke.
I bought that one.
That one has sold way more than normal for people wanting that variant so they can color. And the other one is Cyborg. Cyborg is the other big seller this week of people buying the coloring book variant. All the others are, you know, just kind of the normal sales, people just substituting the coloring book for the regular, you know, if they want it. But those two are selling above and beyond normal for whatever reason. Those are the ones people want to color this week.
My shop owner, what's funny is when I walked into shop Wednesday evening, a guy that was already in there had like a handful of books, and he was like going around getting every single coloring book variant that there was. Luckily, he left a couple for me to get. I got that. I got the Deathstroke and last week's Martian Manhunter. And he also, we were talking with the store owner, and he was saying how, I guess, how well the color book variants have been selling. And he mentioned how Marvel had came out with the Deadpool coloring book, which he pointed to on the shelf. And then the customer that was in there went and picked that up to buy as well.
So. Yeah, we ordered some of those Deadpool coloring books, but they really have not. I think we sold like one or two of them. People just I don't know if it's because the price point is too high.
How much is it?
If I recall, it's not cheap. It's not like a regular
book. I remember it was like a thick book, because I did pick it up, but I didn't see a... I guess I didn't flip it over to the back to see the whatever it went on for the price.
I
want
to say it was like maybe $14.99
or something like that.
Okay.
But it was definitely thick. It definitely had a lot of content to it.
Yeah
but I'm wondering if, you know, the comic, people buy the comic and it's like, well, it's $3, it's $4, plus you've got the comic in there.
Right.
So you're buying the comic and then there's just this extra cover on the outside which you could rip off and color and still have the regular comic there, whereas that Deadpool book is nothing but coloring pages.
Right. It's a dedicated coloring book.
It's all pinup pages and covers without colors on them.
I'm seeing $10 in various places, between $7 and $10.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it was a $9.99 cover price.
Yeah, it was $9.99. Yeah. It was $9.99. That was the list
price.
But
still, it's, you know, if I see a cover, like one of these covers, if I was thinking maybe I want to sit and try to color one, you can buy one and I've got this one to color. But if I buy a book that's got 50 pages in it, am I really going to color 50 pages? Am I going to color 20 pages? Am I going to color 5? You know, is it one of those things where I color one or two and it's like, all right, I'm done.
Yeah.
You know, I looked this up and I'm sort of plugging one of our sponsors that we do ads for, Amazon. So I plugged in the Deadpool coloring book thing, and I clicked on the Amazon link. And apparently Marvel also put out Color Your Own Civil War, Color Your Own Age of Ultron in late 2015. And that's pretty – actually, you know, Color Your Own Civil War is not going to be released until April of 2016, April of this year. So it's interesting that they're jumping on this bandwagon full force with dedicated coloring books.
I do appreciate that my local shop hasn't upped the price on them.
So on the variants?
Yeah. At least the coloring ones.
Yeah, these variants were open to order, so you didn't have to order any numbers of the regular in order to get the variants. You could just, if you wanted to order all variants and no regular covers, you could just as easily do that. So
okay.
That I don't know why anyone would. Yeah. Unlike the Marvel variants where you have to order 79.85% multiplied by the age, how long comics.
Yes.
I did find the title to that Tom King book.
Okay.
A Once Crowded Sky.
There we go.
So look at
Tom King, that'll be $7.95. You can send it by PayPal to.
What was the title that Tim thought it was?
Downstairs.
It's Downstairs.
That's his next novel.
Yeah, really. And you can get that from Amazon.
Actually, that sounds like a good horror title. It's Downstairs.
I know, right?
In a world downstairs. Where the upstairs is safe, it was Downstairs.
It was Downstairs.
That's fine.
All right. Well, since we're looking at this one, I did read Deathstroke this week, so I'll talk about this a little bit. It was mainly an action story. There were maybe 2 pages of key dialogue, and the rest was a lot of punching and shooting and explosions. So there wasn't a whole lot to the story overall. It was well done, you know, what was there. But the key thing is the artwork in this was just amazing.
That's the one book I want to just buy just to look at every week or every month. Because, I mean, even the regular cover looks awesome.
The artwork is nice, but the coloring from Prianto really makes a big difference. I mean, it is just a phenomenal-looking book. It is one of those books where, you know, you get about halfway through and you're just kind of staring at the artwork, just, you know, looking at how it was painted and where the colors are and how it, you know, defines the shapes and the reflections and that stuff. I mean, it is just a pretty, pretty book.
Cool.
But otherwise devoid of content.
Yeah, I mean, otherwise it's just a lot of fighting. It's like watching a, you know, summer blockbuster movie. Mm-hmm. A lot of explosions, a lot of punches, gunshots going off. It's also one of those where there's so much action going on sometimes that you read it and you get a page past and you're like, wait a minute, what just happened? And then you go back and you realize, like, as Deathstroke was doing a backflip through a doorway, he had a gun out that he was shooting, like, underneath his armpit to squeeze a bullet off to hit something. You know, a lot of that type of crazy stuff going on in the fighting. So it gets a little chaotic and a little crazy in there sometimes. But, I mean, the artwork is just fantastic.
Oh. Again, I did not read this, you know, when we had the opportunity to initially, so I'm flipping through this. And, you know, as I've said before, DC has definitely established a kind of house art style that's reminiscent of some of the Image era Jim Lee stuff. And it's very sharp. The colors do make things pop. You know, I give them credit for kind of maintaining, at least across a certain number of books, a very consistent look.
Yeah, it's definitely in the vein of Tony Daniel, Jim Lee.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Interesting, interesting.
What have you read this week, Roddy Cat?
Well, since we're on DC, kind of. Cyborg number 7, which you could kind of say could be a jumping on point, although there is a couple of references to the last arc that you probably may or may not need, I would guess, because they kind of run through the numbers.
Yeah, I don't think you really would need to read them, because it just kind of says, oh, we fought that war and those big battles. Basically,
right. So here we have Cyborg trying to get some more information about his evolving tech. He goes back to Star Labs to try to get some information. The government's there trying to, there's some senator and some government and some general trying to get the tech and, you know, basically say, hey, this could be a menace and we're trying to get ahead of this and not cause any issues and blah, blah, blah. We're going to take all the stuff. And of course, people are fighting it. And on the other side of that, Cyborg runs into a holographic AI of his mother, which conveniently is around, because apparently she was doing a project before she died that scanned her brain. So she's there, and she's kind of disoriented, because I guess it just must have activated for us in some kind of way. And then they're talking because, you know, she has questions, and Cyborg's want to know what, you know, how she's there and whatnot. But this basically goes through everything that has happened to Cyborg so far. And that's kind of where the end book, like I said, that's the majority of the book. And then the other side is where the government's trying to take over everything.
It's a lot of talking in this issue.
Basically.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
How's the art?
No, it's pretty good.
It's okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's clean. I'm not, you know.
I'm going to flip through it now.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just like, now I've got to take a look.
I mean, Compared to the Deathstroke.
There's nothing wrong with art. It's good. Well, I hadn't read Deathstroke, but I guess I would have to take your word for that. But no, it's pretty good art. There's nothing, you know, nothing bad about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not good.
Yeah. Art by Claude St. Aubin.
Mm-hmm. Okay, it was decent to read. Like I said, it was just kind of a bridging arcs.
All right. So, I guess we'll stay in DC, and let me see what I read. Did you guys read Superman 48?
Yes. I did.
Nope.
All right. So, you know, we're making some headway in the Superman story that's been spanning the latter half of, we're going to call it non-New 52 now, where, you know, Superman has been basically depowered through the efforts of what we found out to be Vandal Savage, working with Hoarder Root and Wrath and all these other people who are relatively new. And what we find now is that Superman has discovered he's got a layer of cells that have mutated, basically, much like a cancer would mutate. It would be the result of mutated cells in a body, and those cells are effectively blocking his body's ability to absorb solar radiation. And Superman is willing to take some rather extraordinary steps to find a cure for this and repower himself.
Cryptotherapy.
Pretty much. I thought that was a pretty unique, you know, a pretty unique way of, twisting, you know, this particular weakness.
Unfortunately, I haven't kept up with the Savage Dawn story across all the multiple books. As much as I would have liked. I'm reading, like, Action Comics. Ever since, like, Aaron Kuder stopped doing the main art on it, I've been kind of letting it slide. And then they had the whole, like, crossover started in the Superman annual.
Right.
And then those are always longer to read, and there's, like, 5 different artists on it. So I just kind of, like, skimmed it just to get the gist of what was going on. But I did read this, and it was Adrian Sif. And Cooter or Howard Porter did took turns on the art.
Right. Yeah. Listen, I have not been keeping up with a lot of the Superman stuff. Like you said, that crossover story that this is a part of, I believe. I have not read all of the various chapters of the story, but I felt like this issue gave me the gist of everything that's been happening so far, and I'm fine with kind of getting to this point in the story and getting a real general sense of what's happened prior to this. So I don't know if I need to go back and reread any of those chapters. I kind of know where this is going. I like that, you know, that was actually fairly, fairly unique for a lot of these books. I can just read this and sort of not have to worry about the rest of the crossover. Although, to be fair, I've been listening to all you guys talk about the other issues in the crossover, so maybe that's where my understanding comes from, right?
I was going to say, I like the fact that it feels like there's an actual story progressing, like it's going somewhere. Like it's not, a lot of times you have these issues where they feel almost like placeholder issues. Like you know there's going to be a crossover coming up, or you know there's going to be some sort of event coming up, and so they have to kind of keep the status quo and just have them do some small stories, or, you know, someone's held hostage, so you've got an issue or two where nothing happens, you know, but they're trying to find their way in or something like that. But this actually feels like the character is growing, the story's progressing, we're, mm-hmm. you know, building towards some big thing. And of course, this is issue 48, so I'm sure in issue 50, you know, we're going to get something big happening with Superman.
Sure, just before Reaper Earth.
Right. But I like the conversation that Steve Trevor and Superman have while they're in the elevator going down to Argus, where they're talking about Wonder Woman and the relationships and... Mm-hmm. You know, all of this kind of stuff that's happening in this weird triangle going on between the characters. And I've always liked the Steve Trevor character, and I'm glad they actually have something meatier for him to do here in the New 52. Yeah.
Rogers. You know, he's like Commander Steve Rogers in this.
Well, yeah, he's got a similar looking outfit too.
Exactly. That's exactly why I mentioned it, because I'm looking at what his getup looks like now, and it looks very reminiscent of the Commander Steve Rogers uniform.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, like I said, I like the story. I like where it's going. I like the idea of you know, him fighting to get to Kryptonite, you know, as opposed to the way it usually is of fighting to get away. And the artwork of him while he's depowering, while it's, you know, hurting him, you actually see this physical transformation going through him as he's getting weaker and as it's taking its toll on him.
Mm-hmm.
So I just thought it was really well done. I like the artwork and the colors, and I like where the story's going. It's one of those books where, you know, I'm not jumping up and down excited. You know, I'm not turning every page going, oh my gosh, but I get done with it, and I'm like, yeah, I want to read the next one. Like, I want to know where this is going. This is good stuff.
And that
like
wasn't...
The best part, I think, is the twist on the weakness, on the kryptonite, the effect of kryptonite, and what he can do use it for, and its effect on his physiology.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Tim. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Now, I was going to say, a couple months ago, Doug and I were lamenting how poorly Superman was being written. Change of heart.
Maybe that's another reason why I feel so much better about it now, is because these are actually pretty good.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, we were just giving our honest opinion. We weren't enjoying it before, but it's gotten a lot better.
You know what's funny? The emaciated Superman starts to remind me of. There's an issue. There's a small, like a mini event in Incredible Hulk. Dirt may remember this. Roddy may remember it too. I don't know so much about Tim. I think it was called Countdown because it goes back a ways. And it was you know, a villain basically stealing the gamma from the Hulk, and you know, the Hulk, basically shrunk down to like Bruce Banner frame, and the art is very reminiscent of that, like with the shrunken Superman.
Was that the storyline where they did the gold foil chrome cover?
No, I think that predates that.
Okay.
We're talking like early 90s, maybe.
Mm. You know. Okay.
I mean, it sounds familiar. I just
right. It goes back so far that it's hard to recall.
Like, I don't think I've read that since it was new on the stands. So
right. Yeah. Okay. Let's see. How about the other DC? Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, I've got just the one other DC this week is the other Superman book, and that is Superman, Lois, and Clark, which is still a fantastic story. And this goes back a little bit and gives you a little more history as to how they adapted to this new world, why he's got the black suit with the silver shield on it. And then there have been two plot lines basically going, one for Superman, one for Lois. Lois has been using her knowledge of what happened in the original universe to write an expose about this crime syndicate in this new universe, Intergang, and who's like this high-tech criminal empire. And she's writing the books anonymously, but she knows that, you know, if they ever find out who she is, she's going to be in big trouble because she knows how evil and ruthless they are, whatever. And then at the same time, Superman has been, over the years, keeping track of people who turned into villains in his reality to keep an eye on them, see if they turn into villains in this world. And his keeping an eye on them and collecting them, so to speak, is turned against him in this issue. He falls into a trap where it looks like he may not be so bad off, but it's put his family in danger. And Lois, because of her writing the exposés on this crime group, they've now figured out who she is, and now she's put her family in danger because they're going to come after her whole family to wipe them out. So they both have set off traps, different traps, mm-hmm. that put everybody in danger from these two different sides. So now I'm really curious to see how these two threats come together and how they're going to fight them off, because they're two very different. One is super powered and one is like a high-tech crime group. So I'm looking forward to see how they're able to work through both of those things. So I like the way the story has built up these two different things, and now they're getting ready to smash them together.
Okay. Tim, do you want to talk about Grayson number whatever it is? Number 16?
I believe it is.
Whoa, Tim, you're really low.
Microphone check, 1, 2.
Grayson number 16. Another issue I loved from Tom King, along with Tim Seeley. So this is the first Grayson issue after the Robin War ended. You wouldn't know it because it doesn't really tie into that at all. which doesn't take away from the story because it's still excellent. Grayson has gone rogue from Spiral, along with Agent One, I believe his name is. So basically,
it's Tony the Tiger.
Tony the Tiger. They are basically a two-man team taking down Spiral agents across the world as they're globetrotting, taking them down one by one or two by two, mm-hmm. until they can get to the leader of Spiral, Helena Petrelli.
Isn't it Bertinelli?
Bertinelli. She hires some spies as backup to go take them out, which leads Grayson and Tony the Tiger to go get some backup of their own with a group that I'm not familiar with, but has a familiar name in DC lore, I suppose.
Isn't that Checkmate?
Yes, Checkmate.
Okay.
Who's led by Maxwell Lord, who I didn't know was leading Checkmate.
I didn't know that.
I would have thought he would go and get the Court of Owls as backup since he's...
Wait, so you're saying you didn't read the old Checkmate series from the DC Universe that came out like 10 years ago?
No.
Well, if you had read that Checkmate series, you would know
that's
that.
That's not in continuing anymore, right?
Listen, I didn't read that old Checkmate series either, so I just recognized the gold. I recognize the gold uniforms. I probably remember Checkmate from HeroClix of all things. I was like, who the hell are these schmoes in HeroClix that are in this DC booster pack? And I read up on them. They were Checkmate, so they were like the equivalent of the Shield agent. So
it's like how many shadow organizations are there in DC? I'm sorry, I could say the same thing about Marvel, but it just seems like DC stands out to me.
The fun thing about Checkmate is that, you know, of course it's based off a chess board, mm-hmm. and so there's a Black King and a White King, and they both run the organization, but they both run it from different places, and they both run it for different agendas, and so from time to time, one side is working against the other, trying to make certain things happen or stop certain things from happening. So a lot of times it's Checkmate versus Checkmate as the teams are trying to do different things, and they end up crossing paths along the way, and that was always part of the fun of watching the spies outspy each other.
By the way, shout out to Matt Wang 97 on Twitter, who informs us or reminds me and the rest of us that Hulk Countdown was 1990. Good Lord, have mercy.
Yeah, he also says there were two Checkmate series, one of them by Rucker.
Nice.
Which was the last one you referenced.
There was a nice musical sequence during the issue as well. Very funny. It was just it was Dick Grayson being very cavalier.
And entertaining.
Yeah.
Kind of Bond-like, would you say?
Yes, just a little Bond-like.
Well, I in another review, I think, compared it to Archer, which to me is okay. More adequate, I guess, comparison than Bond. But yes, fun.
What's the tune that they're singing to?
I have no idea. I was wondering that myself. The cover actually does remind me of something Archer inspired, even though there's nothing like really humorous on the cover. It just looks mm-hmm. like something I could see Archer doing.
Mm. I need to catch up with this book. Cause...
I mean, I haven't read this book in ages. I'm glad that this is sort of a good jumping on point. I did not realize that Grayson had gone rogue from Spiral. I sort of understood that he had been, I thought to an extent found out as a plant from from Batman, you know, placed in Spiral by Batman.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the jig was up on that particular scheme, but, you know, it's nice to see that, you know, even without that, there's still a lot to be, you know, there's still a lot of story to be told here.
There's a lot of stuff I didn't understand, even though I've read, I think, every issue, because it's like, it was no secret to everyone that he worked with Batman, I guess because he was outed in Forever Evil, I guess. But it was like, it was never a secret that, you know, he is Dick Grayson, he worked with Batman. So, what else we got?
All right, so that covers DC for me. Those are the two books I read.
Potential click of the week, by the way.
Oh, nice.
Cool, entertaining.
And speaking of, I guess, for Spider-Woman number 3.
Yes, thank you for bringing this up, Roddy.
Mm-hmm. So, as the little side chat on Twitter kind of alluded to earlier, we have a very pregnant Jessica Drew in a hospital in the middle of a black hole because Captain Marvel wanted her to go get checked out. When she does this, some Skrulls come and trek over to try to find some sick prince that they're going to try and kidnap. And, of course, Jessica turns to Don McClane, takes a couple of them out, and continues to do so.
Right. She's the one superhero on duty, on staff, basically around this hospital / maternity ward. So
right, because nobody can get to her, so she's having to do all the dirty, the heavy lifting.
Mm-hmm.
So
are there some secret invasion references in here, or is that gone?
There was one
that was in the first issue.
Yeah, there was one mentioned. I think last issue actually.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I know it was earlier. You know what's funny is that I regret, after having read our review copy, I regret not picking up this issue in physical form, because I like this issue that much.
Yeah,
you know, this is probably the culmination of 2 issues worth of buildup. You know, we've all been introduced to the current status quo of Spider-Woman as being very pregnant, and you know we went through basically 2 issues worth of her resisting the urge to of doing superhero stuff, of her kind of avoiding it, resorting to it as a last resort. But in this issue, she's forced into action, you know, basically doing her superhero thing while being very, very, very rotundly pregnant, you know. And, you know, it's very...
Which seems like it's going to change very, very, very soon.
Exactly, exactly. It's very, very... I was about to say, I didn't want to spoil it, you know. But, you know, it was very entertaining. I had a lot of fun reading this. It's very similar... it had a very similar spirit to the Grayson book. Mm. So if Tim enjoyed the Grayson book, you don't really need to have read the first 2 issues of this to really understand what the situation is that Spider-Woman finds herself in. And it's just as entertaining a read as Grayson was, if not more, because it's just, you know, there's a lot of like Roddy and I've been kind of going back and forth on Twitter talking about how this is very much Die Hard with a pregnant lady, you know, with a pregnant superhero. And it was a lot of fun to read. This is a sleeper candidate for Click of the Week for me.
Yep,
because I was so very surprised at how much I enjoyed this. And the art by
Javier
Rodriguez, you know, was very, very, very good. I know that some people, shout out to Eclectic, are not fans of, you know, it's not a house style at Marvel, but it definitely is a far more indie vibe that some of these books have. But it definitely works well in this. I think the composition, the page composition for some of these pages is off the charts good. And it's just a fun read. So, you know, and we find out why these Skrulls are invading and trying to take over the station. And that was a pretty cool read too. You know, like the spoiler alert, the prince who's there for treatment, basically, has one of the best lines in the book. Roddy's probably trying to think of what I'm referring to. And basically, the Skrull prince is saying, "Oh, we get Earth TV here. You're that Avenger. That's
right.
Me.
The one with the butt.
And if you've been reading Avengers for the last 5 years, you've definitely noticed that Spider-Woman is definitely drawn sometimes very voluptuously and very seductively.
Mm-hmm.
So that made me laugh out loud reading this on the train.
Yes, in reference to, I'm assuming in reference to that, I'm trying to remember the artist who drew that one cover.
Oh, yes, Manera.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. The spider. Yes. That's funny.
I did see a lot of praise for Javier Rodriguez on Twitter the last 2 days for, I guess, a couple of sequences in the book this week.
Yes, it's definitely worth a read. Like I said, I regret not picking up a physical copy myself. I'm going to try to rectify that and pick it up either next week or within the next few days.
All right, what else we got?
How about we get to the one hip-hop cover that came out this week, which was Old Man Logan number 1. It's a tribute to Ice Cube's death certificate.
Oh, yeah.
I picked this up. It's a good cover. I also wanted to shout
out. I went for the action figure variant, actually.
Oh, that's pretty cool. I wanted to give a shout out to, what's the artist's name on this? I just had the
Andrea Sorrentino.
No. I was referring to...
Oh, the Gondo hip-hop cover. Never mind.
I was actually referring to the other pseudo-hip-hop cover that came out this week. It was actually a Deadpool variant for Unbeatable Squirtle Girl number 4 that I picked up just because it's a riff on the hip-hop covers.
Not familiar with that one.
This is actually a Deadpool variant. I got a kick out of the image on the cover of Unbeatable Squirrel Girl number 4. And I wanted to shout that out as a riff on the hip-hop covers. But anyway, back to Old Man Logan number 1. I was kind of confused reading this because we have the Old Man Logan character who I presume is coming straight out of the events that were portrayed in the Secret Wars book. But at the same time, the Secret Wars book ends at a certain place that I believe rolls right into where Extraordinary X-Men is right now. So it's kind of a weird disconnect. Does anyone have anything to mention about that before I move on? Or
that sounds about right.
That's yeah, I didn't read the Secret Wars series, so...
Yeah, I remember it got brought up in Extraordinary.
Like I said, it picks up right when the Secret Wars series ends.
Right. But then I thought that Extraordinary also picks up right when the Secret War series ends. So maybe this is sort of in between.
It's all everything's 8 months in the future, remember?
So isn't this 8 months in the future too, or is this 8 months
prior? Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, I think so, because Extraordinary just ran into him, didn't they? Like this issue or last issue?
The second issue.
Yeah.
Or the end of the first issue.
This opens up with him waking up and being disoriented in New York City, right?
Right, so this has got to be right after the Secret War.
Yeah, this has got to be the 8 month fill.
Yeah. Maybe that's okay. The story they're telling.
Right, so that's got to be where the disconnect has to be resolved because this is this is probably one of the few all new, all different books that doesn't happen 8 months later. This is the in between. This is the 8 months, so that makes a little bit more sense. It definitely helps to make sense of the story because we do have Old Man Logan coming to in current day New York in the Marvel Universe, and you know. We get the immediate fish out of water. It's very kind of Terminator-y. We have a couple flashback sequences that help us understand what Old Man Logan's purpose in the current day Marvel Universe is, and that's to prevent his future from really happening. To that extent, we see one of the things that one of the goals that he set for himself is to take out someone who, I guess, ruled his area of the United States that he lived in while in the Old Man Logan timeline, and he tries to basically prevent things from happening, in the past. And that's where this book is. This is an interesting read. I see that without completely spoiling where this is going in the next issue, we know who his next target is, and it might be an interesting read to get there. I don't know if I want to follow this via physical pull every month, but it seems interesting enough, and I wouldn't blame anyone for wanting to keep up with this.
See, for me, this fills the void of the No Punisher, No Black Widow, No Deathlok. When those books have disappeared, this is the one that fills that violent vigilantism need that I have for horrible, despicable things happening to bad guys. So I really enjoyed this. I thought this was great, and even though, like, I read, you know, Old Man Logan when it was in Wolverine several years ago, but I did not read the series in Secret Wars. You know, it was just one of those things that there's just too much Secret Wars. But now that this one came out, I flipped through it. I love the artwork. I love Sorrentino. I love how when something happens, like someone gets stabbed or shot or punched or whatever, the artwork changes, and you get, like, attention drawn to the violence much more than...
It's very visceral. Like, you can feel it. It's there.
So even though he's sporting the ugliest mutton chops I've seen since the Revolutionary War, I thought the book was really good. I really liked the artwork. And it's a very original looking book. Like, this does not look... You know, you talked earlier about DC having a house style with a lot of books nowadays, with a lot of stuff carrying that Jim Lee look, which of course makes sense because he's there at the company. He's probably giving people pointers and, you know, dictating certain things. But this is a book that you flip through and it doesn't look like anything else on the stands.
Right.
The color is completely different. The line work is completely different. You know, the layout is completely different. And, you know, this is filling that need I have for that extra violent stuff going on in the Marvel Universe. So this is one that I plan on sticking with at least through this arc. Now, if it ever gets to the point where it's crossing over with Extraordinary X-Men, I may let it go. But for where it is now, I really enjoy it.
Cool. I'm glad you enjoyed this that much.
Yeah, I liked it too. Way better than the Secret Wars series.
Yeah, the Secret Wars series was just a tour of the Secret Wars battle world, you know, sections, you know, that he was on. So that's why it was kind of off-putting. But, you know, this story is very much, you know, the Old Man Logan character in present day and him on a mission. So... you know, it that part at least is you know has a story to tell.
Yep.
All right.
Oh, I was also gonna say, I don't know if it's just having the two creative team from their run on Green Arrow back together, but them working together usually produces magic.
Oh yeah, I didn't realize. You know, now that you mention it, yeah, that was the same writer and artist. I didn't.
Oh, Jeff Lemire and Andre. Yeah.
Yeah, I recognize the artwork, but I didn't remember that Lemire was the one writing that.
Yep.
Back when Green Arrow was good.
Yep.
That's funny. All right. Who wants to nominate a book?
I can do my two Marvel that I have left really quick.
Okay.
All different Avengers number 4.
Okay.
Our first book with Mahmoud Azrar on as art, which I loved. I love his art. The colors by, I forget who it is.
McKeag?
Somebody I didn't
read. Yeah, Dave McKeag.
McKeag.
Yeah. Dave McKeag. I like his colors. It's nice and bright. Everything just looks nice and clean and colorful and bright. I guess, as you see on the cover, Thor and Captain America kiss. Thor, in this issue, comes across as, like, as someone said, she's more Hercules in this than, like, Thor Odinson. As far as, like, leaping into battle and being all excited to fight and yada, yada, yada.
Yeah. I kind of thought that was weird because that aspect of the character really hasn't come forward in the Jason Aaron book.
There's one point where she says, like, you know, something to the along the lines of, you only live once, we're not immortal.
Mm-hmm.
When it's like, well, yeah, you are, because you're a god. So then that has them questioning, like, who is this mystery woman?
Yeah, I mean, listen, this was like a cool, fun little one-off story that has the team interacting. But like I said, it was kind of weird to have this aspect. You know, like we're big fans of you know, Thor in general, and the Jane Foster Thor we're all up on right now. We're all caught up to date. So when I say that this particular characterization was out of character, you know, I think everyone understands where I'm coming from. It was just sort of out of the blue. And, you know, it was kind of used to move this particular story along and to, you know, provide that sexual tension with Falcap. But, you know, like I said, I thought I was just sort of confused by that particular aspect of the character coming forward. Otherwise, this book is, you know, it's just another, issue that helps to establish some of the team dynamic, and we're teased with some developments involving the Vision in the next issue. So, some of the things that have become evident in the Vision series, you know, some of the kind of dispassionate behavior exhibited by the Vision, you know, is definitely in this book. So that part at least is consistent. You know, that characterization is consistent from one book to another. So I'm interested to see how that plays in the next issue and see how, you know, see what more we learn about the way the Vision is, what his new status quo is, and compare it to how Tom King writes it in the Vision's own book.
And Jarvis is back.
Yes. Jarvis. Yes, Edwin.
How many times has he been killed?
He's never.
Never? Yeah. Thanks, Rod.
Yeah.
Thanks, Rod.
That was a genuine question. I just figured.
Yeah, no. He's been
injured.
He's been hurt. Been like hurt real bad.
Like during whatchamacallit?
Siege or whatever it was.
During the siege of Avengers Mansion, he was basically beaten to within an inch of his life by Mr. Hyde.
Yeah. I think he lost his eye. Did he lose an eye?
He lost the use of his eye for a while. And but he's gotten better since. So
right,
you know,
and then they just stopped using him for a while.
Right,
flesh wound.
Nice.
Oh, and the other book was All New Inhumans number 3.
Okay,
it was all right. Stefano Caselli's art is good, of course.
Yeah, that's the standout.
Yeah,
absolutely the standout part of this book.
And I guess we learned a little more about one of the new humans that's on the good guys' side. I guess like the ambassador.
Mm-hmm.
I forget her name. She's got the tail, like a lizard tail. She goes into a dream state to talk to. A new human that was created from the Terrigen Cloud.
Swain?
Swain is her name. She and like I said, she talks to one of the new humans in a dream state that was created on that Sing Kong, I think it's the country or something similar, the country there. Sort of, they're guest on. And the new human that she's talking to, sort of like, I guess they explain her powers and sort of tease that she's not as she seems, which I guess she clearly states herself. I think she explains it as she can persuade people, which is why they have her working with like dignitaries and whatnot to basically like
influence.
Yeah, influence wars from not happening. So it's kind of cool.
Listen, like you said, the art by Caselli on this is top notch. This is one of the prettiest books on the stands right now. You know, it's an interesting and an intriguing, you know, kind of like tale of the goodwill Inhuman tour. So, you know, that part at least is at least mildly interesting. I like exploring the some of the new human characters, but the bottom line for me is the art on this book.
Right. So that's it.
I've got a Marvel book to jump to. I don't know if anyone else read it, but Daredevil's out this week.
Yes.
First of all, I love the artwork. Ron Garney and Tom, I think it's Tom Mila? Matt Mila. They have created this unique, very unique look, and you can kind of see it a little bit here on the cover, but a lot of the artwork it's done in shapes more than it's done in lines, and sometimes it's the absence of art being there. The color is used to help define the shapes and items, so it's got this look to it.
It's kind of influenced by the Sin City look, but it's definitely taken in another direction too.
Yeah, I was gonna say, to me it feels like that Frank Miller look. Also, whenever people do what Matt Murdock sees in the comics and the way it's like outlines with, you know, you're supposed to be seeing like the ripples of the sound waves coming off of them or whatever. It's like they've kind of mixed those two together to create this art style. And I love the art style. I love looking at it. This is another one of those books that doesn't look like anything else on the stands right now. It's wholly unique to what's going on in this title. The problem I have, though, is with the story. And it's not that the story itself is bad, but it's just one of those situations where Matt Murdock is fighting or Daredevil is fighting the Hand, and Matt Murdock's law career is in jeopardy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm pretty sure I've read that before.
Right.
I don't know, 24 times by now.
Right. To me, the problem is, and I definitely appreciate that criticism, because I felt the same way. I felt like we've gotten to this point in issue 3 where we could have gotten to this a lot sooner, you know, because what we have at the end of the issue is a meeting with the, you know, with the villain of this first arc, and it feels like this could have happened a lot sooner. We could have had a lot of these standoffs happening a lot sooner. It's just taken a long time to get to this point. You know, developing this this new sidekick slash, you know, fighting partner in Blindspot has taken up some time in this book, and I guess that's one of the reasons why it's taken three issues to get to, you know, some very familiar territory, like you said. I feel like they could have done this in two issues, and we could be approaching, you know, the climax of the story in the next issue. It just feels like it's been drawn out a little bit too long for my taste. For what seems like it's an adequate story for a reintroduction to Daredevil.
Well, what this felt like to me was this issue number three could have been the first issue. You open with the fight,
right?
And then while he's having the fight, you know, Blindspot appears and he has some dialogue. Oh, I'm helping to train this kid, and you get one or two panels of them having a conversation on the rooftop before they go into the fight, and then he's fighting this villain Ten Fingers. Because he messed with a witness, and then you have one or two panels of him having a conversation with the witness saying he's not going to testify now because his family's threatened, and then the fight resolves, and then you get all the stuff happening at the legal office. That could have been the first issue.
Right.
And so it's the first two issues that we have. You really could have skipped if you thought, well, maybe we'll see where Daredevil's at, you know, in this new version. Well, if you want to know, pick up number three. If you haven't read one and two, I think you'll be fine.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's an excellent point. And by the way, the depiction that Garney puts together of this new villain, Ten Fingers, just creeps me the hell out. Seriously, every time I see that Ten Fingers guy on the page, creeps me the hell out. I don't know what it does for you, Dirt, but it creeps me the hell out, and I want to turn the page very quickly.
Because of the Ten Fingers?
Yeah, it's just creepy.
Just the extra digits bother you?
It's creepy. The way Garney draws it is extra creepy.
I forgot that this book was even out there. I was like trying to mentally count the books Charles Soule's doing.
You know what I was going to say? It didn't even pop up in my Comixology email this week. For whatever, I think it might have been solicited for like last week and it got pushed to this week or something like that. So, but anyway, did anyone read Extraordinary X-Men number 6?
It's not my pull, but have not got to it yet.
I won't spoil too much. Again, this is, if anyone is interested in kind of recapturing the spirit of 80s and 90s X-Men, this is the book to read. This is a lot of fun, lots of superhero stuff. Jeff Lemire is definitely got something going on in this book, and it's a good thing. It does have Old Man Logan in it, and some of the things that I was talking about earlier are evident in this book. I really don't get the, that 8-month gap is pretty drastic when you read the characterization of the Old Man Logan here and the characterization in his solo book. But again, seriously, if you want old school classic X-Men action, this is the book to read. This is this was a lot of fun. There's lots of team, X-Men team action, and we have the reappearance of a sometimes ally, sometimes villain, former X-Men at the end of this book. I will not spoil who it is, but I was genuinely surprised to see this character and interested to see how Storm reacts to the reintroduction of this character. So this is good. I definitely, like I said, I definitely appreciate this for helping kind of rekindle my love for X-Men books. All new X-Men is definitely on the chopping block for me. I'm definitely not. It seems so rare that I look forward to reading all new X-Men, but I definitely look forward to reading Extraordinary X-Men. So for any of you X-Men fans out there, pick up this book.
Good sell job.
You got it.
Well, I guess, are we on rapid?
Yep.
Yeah, we're on rapid fire.
Okay, well then, let me go ahead and get these two out of the way, because that'll get me. Kanan, the Last Padawan, number 10. We have Kanan and his master, Depabalaba, on a mission to Joe, they get ambushed and have to fight off a bunch of battle droids, only to be, well, they finally get saved by some more troopers that finally get two of them. And then they meet up with General Grievous at the end of the book, which is going to start off a fight.
Really?
Yeah. It was cool. Grievous and some
it's
other
on the cover
samurai.
Too, so
yeah, there was that. Well, they had already said so last issue anyway, but yes, on the cover. But yeah, he finally shows up, and I guess they're going to fight next issue.
Okay.
And I'm not sure who the other guy that was with him, because it was some kind of cyborg samurai-looking thing that I'd never seen in the thing before, but it could have been one of those ones that was in the movie. Who knows? Anyway, my next and last book is Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur number 3.
How is that?
It's a fun book, actually. It's kind of cute. Like, we have Lunella, and she's, you know, smarter than she probably should be at her age. She's inhuman. She's trying to find... What she's trying to do is find a cure, because she doesn't want to, say, come of age and think... Because she's just all like, well, I'm going to become a monster, or something's horrible going to happen, and she's going to... When she finally mutates, or whatever the case may be. So she's trying to find answers to how to stop that, because she's, like, really afraid of it. So she finds this Omniwave projector, and that's when she ends up meeting Devil Dinosaur, and now Devil Dinosaur is in the present with some Killfolk, and the Killfolk are pretty much found her and trying to get it from her, and Devil Dinosaur is trying to save her by putting her out of actions, but she's trying to, you know, do the thing, and then there's a big little scuffle that happens, and then and her parents are none too pleased about her skipping out at night trying to do all the things that she's doing. So that comes to a head, and then, well, not come to a head, but that happens, and then she's at school the next day, where she's hidden Devil's dinosaur underneath the school. Which ends up being an issue, because there was a fire that happens, and then Devil Dinosaur comes up and they blame him, but he ends up saving them by turning into a giant slide. And at the end of the book, we have a guest appearance who's going to be in the next issue by a one big teenage green guy. So, but yeah, like I said, this is a fun kind of a, it's almost kind of an adorable book to read. But
it's kind of whimsical, right?
Like, yeah.
There seems to be a nice heart, nice spirit to this book. I just haven't been able to get into it, just because I don't know, maybe there's just like a dearth of superhero action in it, you know?
Right. Yeah, this is something about her interactions with people, because she's kind of one of those, like, too smart for the people she's around, and she's, you know, kind of standoffish, sort of, but she's also, at the same time, a, you know, quirky preteen person who's kind of, like, on the outs with the people around her, so they just kind of think, like, she's just some crazy nerdy girl, you know, which I guess she kind of is, but, you know.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I've heard that this is rumored to be on the chopping block, though.
I can't say I'm surprised by that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure how, I mean, I like this book, but I didn't think it was ever going to catch a whole lot of people.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
There was Howling Commandos of S.H.I.E.L.D., and there was something
Red Wolf.
Else.
Yeah,
Red Wolf, I'm not surprised at all.
Yeah,
but speaking of Howling Commandos of S.H.I.E.L.D., I read this book this week. I'm a fan of S.H.I.E.L.D. in general, and read a lot of S.H.I.E.L.D. books, in the past. You know, this version of the Howling Commandos, as told by Frank Barbieri, friend of the show and previous guest of the Comic Chronicles, it's interesting. I like the story that's being told here. You know, I like the fact that he's using the Dum Dum Dugan character as an LMD, because it's been revealed that, and I'm not spoiling anything here, Dum Dum Dugan has long ago died, and every appearance of Dum Dum Dugan in the recent Marvel history, it has been a life model decoy, a very sophisticated life model decoy that Nick Fury commissioned to make sure that Dum Dum Dugan basically carried on a legacy in S.H.I.E.L.D. This particular version of the Howling Commandos is a supernatural commando team. And, you know, we have a lot of growing pains with this unit. One potential recruit is basically connected to one of the co-villains of this book. Right now, one of the villains is the Sphinx. And the Sphinx is using this one character, this one lackey who has a telepathic connection and a familial connection with one of the potential recruits for the Howling Commandos, and that's how a lot of the story moves forward from the last issue to this one. I happen to just like some of the characters that they're using, some of the interactions that Barbieri puts in between Dum Dum and Warwolf, this kind of, I think he's a newer character. Jasper Sitwell has been made a zombie. Hit Monkey is in this. Like, it's just a weird collection of characters, and it's just, to me, it's got a lot of great spirit. And it does play with the idea that Dum-Dum is almost a sentient android, a sentient robot, you know. You know, it's a robot with Dum-Dum's emotions and feelings and memories. So it's kind of cool to see Barbieri use that as a story, you know, as a story device. So, you know, I'm entertained by this, but at the same time, like Roddy said earlier about Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, I understand why this probably hasn't gained a lot of traction with readers and collectors. So, you know, I'm not surprised that this is one of the first all new, all different books to be on the chopping block.
I wasn't crazy about the whole Monster Squad thing of the book. So, mm-hmm.
But it's, to me, it's the Dum-Dum Dugan LMD character that really sells this for me. And if you're not really interested in that, then I understand why you wouldn't want to read this book very often. But, you know, I like reading, you know, I like the way Barbieri is using that particular character. Mm-hmm. So it makes it fun for me to read. But, you know, I'll be sad to see it go, because I don't think this is selling very well. There's always plenty of copies at the bigger shops that I go to, so.
Yeah. Oh, wait, that's not a werewolf from Excalibur / X-Men, is it?
No, I don't think so.
One of them. Okay. Mm-hmm. And usually a bunch of them.
Oh, no. Aren't those like the silver-colored?
Yeah, yeah.
No. This okay. is just, Werewolf is this dude's code name.
Okay.
He's a werewolf.
Yeah, sure.
Does he go to war?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Well, now it makes
werewolf.
Sense.
Oh, wait, it's that one, the one guy. Okay. The kind of real aggressive. Okay. Yeah, no, the really, he's a kind of real aggro dude, and he turns into a werewolf. I do remember reading an issue.
Yeah,
but I thought he was already part of the team.
When it first started, so.
Right, but I thought he was already part of the team, so.
Oh, yeah, he is, but he creates a better bond with Dugan. Basically, everyone concedes in this issue that Dum-Dum is in charge of this particular group of Howling Commandos, finally.
Gotcha.
You know, I just realized I read another book this week that I didn't write down. I've been trying to read ahead, you know, instead of catching up. So I actually read something last week, and I forgot that it was coming out this week. And it's a follow-up to what we were talking about before with Zenoscope books and how some of the books have changed a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
This is Red Agent.
Too.
Yeah, actually, this is Red Hood or Red Riding Hood, their version of her.
Mm-hmm.
And in this world, she's more of an assassin, I guess you could say. But this
Little Red Riding Hood.
This story is built around the idea that there's this government agency that's trying to stop some of these superpowered beings who have, you know, have a more villainous side, and they've asked her to come in and be a part of the team to help save. In this case, it's a young hacker, and I was actually very surprised with how decent this book was. Mm-hmm. Like I said before, Zenoscope books had more of a horror bent to them, and I always expected them to be like a bad B movie. And you can see that there is a little bit of TNA being used on the cover.
Just a little.
Sell some copies, you know.
Just a little.
But the story actually was pretty good. It's your standard, you know, hero going in to save the hapless civilian who has no idea his life is in as much danger as it's going to be type of setup. But it was well done, and I actually enjoyed it. And it made me go, well, you know what, this is a number one. I jumped on, I read it, I enjoyed it. I probably will stick through, it's a 5-issue series. I probably will read this through because it was much more enjoyable than I expected.
I'll give you this. It was a solid story, you know, and somewhat predictable to a certain extent.
Mm-hmm.
But, again, did you feel like, you know, this is definitely someone who grew up in the 90s reading Image and Jim Lee and Mark Silvestri comics?
Oh, yeah. I mean,
art, because that's, you know, you could see that it's heavily influenced by that style.
It is heavily influenced by that, but it was better than some of the artwork I've seen in Marvel and DC books recently. So
I'll give you that. I agree. Yeah.
So definitely one to look out for.
Yeah, I like this book. I'm glad that you brought it up and reminded me that I did read this. I think it was like the last book I read on my way home tonight. So because I saw that I had downloaded a number one. I was like, ooh, a number one. You know, something fresh, something new. So, yeah, like you said, it was, it was an enjoyable read. I'll probably try to keep up with it.
Yeah,
I might check it out.
Yeah, you've read some of the Red Riding Hood before, haven't you?
It was Robin Hood was the one I read.
Robin Hood, okay.
Yeah, and I want to say, I can't remember, there was a crossover probably like in a few years ago, and that might have had them, like, a lot of stuff kind of crossing over, and after that, things kind of switched a little bit. I may be wrong about that, or changed a little bit, but I think this was probably what I read was probably around before that.
It's also one of those books that you can tell there's a history to the character and there's a history to this universe that I'm unfamiliar with, but it gave you just enough that you could follow this story. And if I decided I wanted to go back and read them, it doesn't give everything. Like it doesn't just lay out like here's what came before and list every single thing that happened. So if I did go back and read the characters, I'd feel like I could get the story out of it. It's not that everything was given away in this because it's a number one, but enough was given that if this is my first introduction, I followed it fine, and I didn't feel like I missed out on key information I need in order to understand this story.
Right. Cool.
There you go.
All right. I think it might be clicks of the week time.
I'm just going to go ahead and put it out there for Spider-Woman number 3.
I second that. Believe it or not. Surprise, surprise, surprise. I second that. Spider-Woman number 3. Unbelievable.
I have a tough decision between Grayson number 16 and Omega Men number 8. I think we have to go with Grayson number 16.
Nice.
Cool.
And I'm going to go with that Old Man Logan.
Nice.
It fills that void of what I was looking for in the Marvel Universe.
Agent well, 70, you went what?
I went Spider-Woman.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I just put it in there.
We got some variety up there.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear. I'm glad from this show because I have listened. You know, I try to listen to the show sometimes after it comes out in a podcast format. I'm glad to hear that we've come off our Secret Wars hangover.
There were just better books this week.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a really good week. All right. So I want to thank everyone for tuning in to tonight's episode of Comic Book Chronicles. Also, I need to start trying to speak in the past tense for people listening on the audio or video recorded version.
How so?
I listen to a wrestling podcast that records live every Tuesday night, and like during his little intro, the main host, you know, mentions, you know, if you're listening on the, you know, recording or whatever. So I was like, oh, I need to start doing that.
Mm. Hey, before we go, let me put this out here because I don't want to leave this until next week. For people of a certain vintage, just this breaking news, Stretch Armstrong is having a cartoon coming to Netflix. You know, Stretch Armstrong, for anybody to know, think of a action figure form of Plastic Man or Mr. Fantastic, and you pretty much are there. But he was built like a wrestler. Or actually, yeah, he was pretty much a wrestler.
Yeah.
So that's, and it's going to debut in, looks like Hasbro Studios is going to be their first one for Netflix, and it's going to debut in 2017. And it's, apparently they're going to make him a teenager, and he's got his two best friends. So this is going to be fun.
Two best friends in the whole wide world.
Oh, no!
Alrighty then.
make sure to follow us on our individual Twitter accounts. I'm at TimDOGG98 and at CBCron. Roddy Cat is at Roddy Cat and at News Nerds Need. PCN Dirt is at PCN _ Dirt. And go to his website, popculturenetwork.com.
Yay, I've almost hit 50,000 loops on Vine.
Woo!
Go check out his comic review, Vines.
That's such a great Perez cover right there that Roddy just put up. Edwin Jarvis takes over.
Yeah.
And make sure to go follow at @agent_70 on Twitter.
Yes!
And we'll be back live next Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. You can go and bookmark theclicknation.com/live. And every new episode for each week after starting Thursday afternoon / evenings, that week's episode will be up there for you to watch. And we are the Comic Book Chronicles, and we are signing off.
Hey! Boom!